Memory Serves by Temple Marker. Read by the author. The thing is, it's not like Quentin doesn't have prior experience with this. Sure, okay, this time the monster is outside of his own neurochemistry and wearing the face of the love of his life and casually murdering dozens of people without giving two fucks about plastering Elliot's face all over the world surveillance footage and almost certainly branding him a top 10 watchlist serial killer. Sure. But this is far from the first time Quentin has sat in a room with a monster that has a vested interest in fucking Quentin up from the inside out. The first time, Quentin was 13. Maybe it was something about puberty. Fuck knows, he's been through every speculative psychoanalytic ringer out there, trying to pinpoint a start for it. But Quentin was 13. And the distance between his bed and the door one night became equivalent to the yawning chasm of the Grand Canyon. His dad had planned a whole vacation around it. Grand Canyon, Yosemite, the works. They didn't go. Quentin spent that summer vacation being shuffled around from one child psychologist to the next pediatric psychiatrist until he had leveled up to case manager and his parents stopped talking to one another. They gave him all kinds of tools to try and describe it. Tick these boxes. Draw your feelings. Tell me what makes you happy, Quentin. There wasn't a way to describe it. There never has been. Shitty metaphors that are too hard to formulate anyway when he's in the thick of it. Proverbial black cloud fogging up the glass and crawling over his skin. He never has the energy to fight it. They get somewhere with the medication after that summer. Trial after trial, until they find something that kind of works, that gets him to school and gets his homework done, and makes Julia, irrepressible Julia, who is shining way too bright for his eyes or his heart, earnestly share, "How glad we are that you're doing better, Q. It was really scary." Over lattes and chocolate cookies, he's never hungry enough to eat. Then again, at 15. Again at 18, and he's taking a semester-long sabbatical. Again at 21, and then swiftly, cruelly, at 22, when the meds just cut him off at the knees for no reason. Them's the biochemistry breaks, kid. So he's 22, and he's been living with a monster for almost 10 years. And then, magic happens. Break bills and physical kids and glass menageries, Alice and Magic and Welters and Margot and Elliot. He stops his meds because the dean says with cool authority that magic will fix things, by which is meant Quentin. Quentin is not fixed. He resumes his medication. Sure, it was kind of unique, being locked in his own head by the woman he loved for a decade and a half, doomed to go truly batshit crazy in the funhouse mirror of his own neuroses. That was a trip. But also a Tuesday. It was hardly the first time he'd looked in a mirror and wondered if the reality around him was about to shatter. Just the first time it was spurred by someone outside, instead of the monster inside his head. And yeah. It was a drag seeing his depression take his own face, taunt him with everything he's been hearing on repeat for the last 10 years, like the worst kind of trip. MDMA sparking off citalopram mixed with a really dumb hit of sativa. Classic. Just do it, Quentin. Sure. Nothing that hasn't crossed his mind 100 times. Only getting near it, really, that one time. All this hash the past deal is to say, this is not the first time Quentin has been alone with a monster that is hyper-focused on him. Hello, darkness, my old friend. It only ever works as a meme if it stubs that edge of truth. Hello, darkness, my friend. The hardest part isn't the monster. The hardest part isn't the permanent fight or flight. It's not even that this monster is wearing Elliot like a rented suit. How it would offend Elliot's sensibilities to be worn so cheaply and with such little care. No. The hardest part is that Quentin is getting used to this. He heard a line once, some HBO thing James was way into during undergrad. Semper Gumby, always flexible. That's what it's like. Quentin, folding and flexing into these cramped crawl spaces, stretching and molding to fit into whatever hideous situation is coming for them next. Sure, he's still taking his meds. Picks them up at the Duane Reade with a forever forward dated script he charmed from his last one. Who has time to see a psych for a med refill when cleaning blood splatter takes up so many hours? So there's the meds. But the best they're doing is making sure there's a rope bridge across the chasm. The thing the meds have going for them is that they're keeping him up off the floor. Some days, the floor sounds like a better option. But then the monster, beside his bed, turns his head, and for an awful, charged moment, he looks like Elliot. Only a moment, before it's back to Looney Tunes and Chicharron and the traumatic deaths of half the supermarket line out of idle amusement. In his whole life as a patient, shuffling in and out of clinics, only one doc ever got it. It's never about the darkness, never about the monster. It's not about the demons that have to be wrestled, or the voice in the back of the mind, or the fun panoply of comorbid conditions that accompany major depressive disorder like ducklings in a row. Hey, you made it, she said, although Quentin can't remember her name, she was gone the next time he went in. You made it through another day. You fought like hell to keep breathing. You're still here. Quentin will always fight for one more day. One more day, next to the monster. One more day to get to Elliot. One more day. One more. Quentin's been sitting with a monster all his life. What's one more?